Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Now, prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow. Now is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast. With host Eddie Trunk.
Hey, everybody, it's Eddie Trunk, and this is the Eddie Trunk Podcast, news-making interviews with the biggest names in rock and metal each and every week. Join me for new episodes every Thursday. Be sure to subscribe so you do not miss one, and you'll be caught up on everything happening in the world of rock with all of your favorite artists. Of course, if you really want to be caught up and you're in the U.S. and Canada, you would be tuning in to Trunk Nation, which is my daily rock talk and interview radio show. Heard Monday through Friday, live 3 to 5 Eastern, noon to 2 Pacific, on Sirius XM Channel 103 Faction Talk, or anytime on the Sirius XM app on demand. If you're only listening to this podcast, you're only getting a tiny taste of what I do on the radio each and every day, so be sure to come on board and join me for Trunk Nation. If you aren't already, and become a Sirius XM subscriber and hear the full picture, everything you hear on this podcast originated live on my radio show. You're only getting a tiny, tiny taste if you're only listening to the podcast. So hope you join me for Trunk Nation every day on Faction Talk 103, again, 3 to 5 Eastern, live anytime on the Sirius XM app. So if you can't listen at that time because it's in the middle of the workday, you can easily go to the app on your drive home, pull it up and listen, whatever you'd like to do. Of course, there's also a sixth show on Sirius XM on Mondays, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern, on Hair Nation, terrestrial radio show, social media, at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook page. We got a lot going on. And I personally have some cool stuff coming up I want to share with you. If you're in Texas, some great stuff coming up. March 16th, I will be doing my next speaking Q&A show. It's at the Guitar Sanctuary in McKinney, Texas, just outside of Dallas. I've done this before. They're always a blast. This one should really be over the top because joining me for my show as guests will be Richie Kotzen, Mike Portnoy, and Billy Sheehan, all three members of the Winery Dogs, will be coming by and sitting in with me for an interview segment during my speaking Q&A show. Maybe even ask the guys a question during that evening. And free beer, courtesy of Tupps Brewery. It's going to be a great time. March 16th, Guitar Sanctuary, McKinney, Texas. Tickets are going fast, and I'm not hyping you on this. I'm told that the tickets are selling incredibly well. It's not a gigantic place, so get on it now. Go to theguitarsanctuary.com for information to buy your tickets. Again, that's March 16th. March 17th, I'll host the Winery Dog Show, which is in Dallas at Amplified Live, and I'll also be hosting their show, which is on March 19th in Houston at Warehouse Live. Also, just announced, April 1st, I'll be hosting the record release party concert by the band Last in Line, which features Vivian Campbell, of course, from Def Leppard and Dio, Vinnie Appice, Phil Soussan, and Andrew Freeman. This is going down at the Hard Rock Cafe on the Las Vegas Strip on April 1st. And come on out and join us. Tickets are on sale now. There's a link on my website or my social media if you'd like to buy tickets. The day before that, March 31st, I'll have all four members of the band in studio with me to celebrate the release of their new album from Las Vegas. So for SiriusXM subscribers, you'll be able to call in, talk to the guys, listen to that show. Somewhere down the line, we'll likely bring that to you as a podcast as well. So a lot of cool stuff going on. Keep an eye on the social media. I'll keep you posted on everything. And before you know it, we're super close to the sailing of the next Monsters of Rock cruise, which is coming up at the end of April. I broadcast the radio show from that. I've hosted every one of them. So there's a lot of cool stuff going on. Again, keep an eye on the socials for info and updates, and also some links on the homepage to eddietrunk.com. We have two interviews for you this week. Coming up a little bit later on, we will welcome Cinderella drummer Fred Coury. Cinderella is pretty much no longer active as Tom Kiefer works solo these days. Fred has a career scoring TV shows and movies, and it's pretty fascinating how he got into it, and he talks about the latest show that he's scoring right now called The Ark. So if you ever wondered what happens to some of these musicians when they transition into other things from performing, Fred will give you a great insight on that because he's had a great career and continues to have a great career, again, scoring movies and TV shows and even sporting events, and he'll tell you all about that coming up a little bit later on. But we lead the podcast this week with David Draiman, the lead singer of Disturbed. Disturbed announced a big tour going out this summer. Of course, they released a new album last year, and I hadn't talked to Draiman in a bit. I've known him for quite a while, and it was great to spend some time and visit with him. So we start the podcast with David Draiman, and second up will be Fred Coury of Cinderella. Let's get to David right now on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. David, how are you, buddy?
How are you, Eddie? Sorry I'm late, brother. I had to pick up my kid from school.
Nah, you got to do. Those are the important things. No problem at all. Hey, where are you living now? Last time I ran into you in L.A., you were living in Hawaii. Are you still there?
No, I'm living in Miami, Florida these days.
Oh, so you got out of Hawaii. I was like, it must have been a hell of a time to have to commute from Hawaii when you did have to commute.
Oh, dude, it added on 5 to 6 hours to every single trip. Every single time I had to go out on tour, it felt like I was going to Europe. It was it was interesting.
Yeah, and as a guy that travels a lot when you're on the road, the last thing you want to do is travel when you don't have to that far, I would think.
I used to justify it by saying, you know, at least I'm going home to paradise. But at the end of the tour, you know, if paradise was just at least like 4 or 5 hours closer of a flight, that would make me happier.
I gotcha. Well, listen, man, I don't want to keep you too long. I know you've got family stuff and all of that. But I realized that I hadn't had you on for the last record, Divisive, which, of course, came out not too long ago in November. And then yesterday or the day before, you guys announced a big summer tour. So I just wanted to check in with you and have you say hello to the audience a little bit. And, you know, for the last day or so, I've been taking calls from the audience about what their first concert experience was, the first show they went to. I'm curious, what was yours?
My very first concert experience was being a very, very bad Jewish boy on a Friday night and sneaking out of my parents' house on the Sabbath and going to what they used to call the venue, the Cabaret Metro, not just the Metro, back in Chicago, legendary music venue in Chicago. And I don't even remember the name of the band. It was just some punk rock cover band. And they were doing just a whole bunch of old punk rock tunes. And I fell in love with the energy and the connection that the frontman that night had with the crowd. It was going to that show that night that made me want to do what I do today.
So that's really interesting. So you really just wanted a taste of what being in a club and experiencing live music was like. It wasn't even who was actually playing it.
No. I loved the fact that here was this guy and here were these guys, these people on a stage, and everybody was just letting all of their energy and emotion fly, and he was like wielding it and helping them soar to greater heights and you know, being a Pied Piper of sorts. And it was just really, really appealing to me.
When was the first time you actually bought a ticket, though, the band you saw where you went because you really wanted to see the band? Do you remember that?
Yeah. I think that was Def Leppard on their Hysteria tour, and they played in Rosemont Horizon in Chicago at the Rosemont Horizon. It's not called that anymore. Now it's called Allstate Arena. And I remember being absolutely blown away. I couldn't believe the number of just devastatingly beautiful women at the concert. I mean, it fulfilled every single fantasy that I had had about the whole situation and then some. So
if there's any question at all about wanting to be a front man after that first experience, you go to Def Leppard in 87 on the Hysteria tour, you look around in the arena a little bit and you're like, yeah, I'm definitely going to be a front man for a living.
Oh, dude, there were lines of girls waiting to get into the little underneath area of the stage. They had this whole area under the stage where God knows what the heck went down under there, but it looked like a good time because there were literally lines of girls dressed to the nines waiting to just be shuffled in there. It was the weirdest thing, but I was just mystified by it.
Yeah. Magical time, those mid-80s in the MTV era. It really was. Man, Divisive's been out for a couple months now. Killer-sounding record. How's the reaction been to the new album? I know you got a couple singles and videos out there already, and the Disturbed fans have had a chance to live with it a little bit. How's the response been?
I think people are really digging it, man. You know, the streaming numbers are looking good on the tracks. Everybody seems to be really into it. You know, we had to deal with the, you know, Leviathan going ahead and releasing, you know, the biggest single they've had in years with the Metallica boys, and God bless them, it's a killer track. But, you know, it kind of made the progress of some of everybody else's stuff kind of have to take a backseat for a little while. But I think that the thing that we're looking forward to most is the tracks that we didn't get to play live before the record came out. We got to play the first single off the record, Are You Ready? We got to play Unstoppable, but we didn't get to play the current single, Bad Man. And we certainly didn't get to play the duet, which is going to be the single after Bad Man, the duet with Ann Wilson, which I'm really looking forward to. We're going to be shooting a video for that beginning of April, which I'm currently in vicious training mode trying to get into shape for.
Well, I wanted to mention that for folks that don't know, on the new Disturbed album, there's a song called Don't Tell Me that is a duet with David and the legendary Ann Wilson of Heart, which is just an amazing song. So I'm happy to hear that is going to be a single and video. How did you connect with her, David? I mean, obviously, I'm assuming you were a fan. Being a singer, how could you not be? But was she a Disturbed fan? Like, what was the common ground? What was the history there?
I had heard from somewhere in the press or somebody leaked to me that she had really loved our version of the Simon and Garfunkel tune, The Sound of Silence. And I was blown away that she even, you know, knew who we were. So I was talking in a thread on Twitter one day, and it was me and Bruce Dickinson and a few other people, and we were discussing who we thought was the best female rock voice of all time. And we all said Ann. You know, female, it doesn't matter, male or female. She's one of the greatest, not just rock, but greatest female singers of all time. Yeah, it doesn't matter. So, you know, I figure she was very gracious after we all made our comments and very, you know, very, very flattered by it. And I'm like, you know what? If there's ever a time, this is the time. So I messaged her and I'm like, hey, you know, we're about to go into the studio and I would love to collaborate. And I guess the person who monitors her Twitter account got back to me and eventually put me in touch with Ann, and she was totally into it. And I ended up sending her the version of the song that we had tracked with my vocals all the way through and she loved it. And next thing I knew, I was on a plane heading to Oakland, California to go ahead and track her and sing with her and harmonize with her. I mean, it was really a pinch me, literal, genuine fanboy moment for me. I mean, she's absolutely amazing and was just a pleasure to work with and killed every single line that we threw at her.
So that's an interesting thing right there, though, which is very cool. So, because a lot of times you hear about this stuff and a guest track, a guest vocal or something on a record, and I'll talk to the artist and they'll be like, well, we haven't even met yet. They did it remotely. They sent it in. You physically got together then.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, dude, I wasn't going to miss that opportunity. You know, I'm first of all, I wanted to make sure it was right. Don't get me wrong. I trust our producer, Drew. Drew Falk, amazingly talented guy. I would highly recommend him to anybody who has the opportunity to work with him. But for this, for the vocals, to make sure it was 100% right, I had to be there. So, and, you know, Danny came with me as well. And it was just something, you know, to put in our, you know, record books and our scrapbooks. I mean, truly an amazing, amazing experience.
And I had Ann on here on this show not too long ago for her latest record. And I think she lives in Florida now as well, doesn't she?
I don't know. That's possible. I thought she still lived in the Bay Area, but I might be wrong.
The time I talked to her, I thought she had said she had also just moved to Florida. So who knows, man? She could be your neighbor. You got to look her up. She could be just up the street for all you know.
We'll have to figure it out for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. So a video is in the works for that. And again, that song is called Don't Tell Me. That'll be coming soon. I would imagine in the next month or so, maybe.
You know, we're going to shoot it beginning of April. And then maybe we're trying to still figure out a target date for the release of the single. A lot of it depends on when the current single Bandman starts going down.
Which there's a video for that already out, which is really cool. You know, you guys, whether it's Hey You or Bad Man, I mean, when you do these videos, you guys have a really cool look to them. It looks like you really go a little bit above just the straight performance video to do some cool visuals. Is that still, that's still something that's really important to you and the band, I would think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it should be important to everybody, but especially these days in terms of everybody doing these carbon copy type of videos that all look relatively similar. It's like, we're going to find a different basement for you to shoot in. We're going to bring in some lighting. The band will perform. We'll run the camera around 360 degrees for a little while and then assemble the footage and scramble it up. And there you go. And we like thinking outside the box a little bit. And, you know, the great manipulation of AI that was utilized for the Badman video, I thought was next level. Very groundbreaking stuff. I love being able to go and push the envelope when it comes to the visual thing for us.
Yeah, no doubt. And you mentioned that Ann Wilson, Disturbed, really got on her radar with your version of Sound of Silence. And obviously you got on a lot, even though the band had been enormously successful prior to that, it really, doing that cover really seems to have crossed over into some new ground for you guys and connected Disturbed to some people like maybe Ann, who wouldn't really have been all that well known. The band wouldn't have been all that well known to. Does it blow you away now that we're a few years away from that record coming out and that cover coming out, the impact that covering that song has had on your career?
It's amazing. I mean, you know, it was, as they call it, Eddie, lightning in a bottle, right? You have that one just spectacular moment where you're able to find a mystical combination of elements that opens up massive doors and reaches people of all walks of life and resonates with so many people, including Paul himself. So, I mean, it and the reincarnations of the song that keep on taking place, people covering our cover, I think is mind-blowing to me. It's like, they're not doing the Simon and Garfunkel version of the song. They're covering our version of the song, which I thought was like, oh my God. It's like, okay. Yeah. Very, very flattering. I mean, stuff like that. I mean, stuff like seeing it being utilized by NASA, by so many different memorials and so many different, you know, poignant, you know, things that it ends up becoming affixed to. It just keeps on growing, and I love that. I love that it continues to reach people.
You guys have done, you know, your choices for the songs you've covered have always been really interesting, and you've always, you know, I've always said whenever an artist does a cover, I feel like the artist should try to make it their own a little bit. You know, if you do it cookie cutter, carbon copy, it's kind of like, what's the point? And you guys have always picked interesting songs to cover, and you've always made them very disturbed. And I think of, for those that don't know, you did a really cool version of If I Ever Lose My Faith in You, the Sting song. And then, of course, going back, you did Genesis, Land of Confusion. So the idea to do these songs and not necessarily you guys being a heavy rock band, not covering prototypical other heavy rock, where does the decisions? Is it a band decision? Is it one guy that might walk in and say, hey, let's do Simon and Garfunkel? Like, where do those choices come from?
No, we love going left of center. It's much more challenging. You know, don't get me wrong. The you know, self-indulgent aspect of our choice often leads us to covering something like Judas Priest or Faith No More or something like that. But I think that when we choose the stuff that's not typical, the, you know, whether it's Sting or Genesis or Simon and Garfunkel or Tears for Fears or anything else we've done, I love being able to take something that, from a thematic standpoint, from a lyrical standpoint, makes sense with who we are as a band, and then take the music and meld it and shape it and give it the identity of the band and try to see if we can even up the ante a little bit, as difficult as that always is and as daunting of a task as that is. So it's like a... it's like a chess match for us. We love it.
And you had a lot of success personally guesting with Nita Strauss on a track called Dead Inside not too long ago. I've known Nita for a long time, since when she was playing in a Maiden cover band, actually. How did the connection with you and Nita come about?
Well, me and her guy, Josh, who manages her and is her significant other and, you know,
drummer.
Amazing dude I've known for, and his drummer, her drummer, and a very talented musician in his own right, a great songwriter, him and I have been friends for many, many, many years. And when they first were trying to put together the concept of this solo record that she did, and they were thinking of guesting, having other singers guest on the record, they reached out to me with this particular track. And once I got into it, it was like a couple days and I had this killer idea for the melody and for the vocal. And I basically pestered them all hours of the day and night for about a week straight, you know, hashing out the idea, and then flew to LA and tracked it with them. And it came out amazingly. And I was very, very pleased with it.
Yeah, it's real good, and it's it did very well. So I thought that was great to see for her as well. She continues to build a career on a number of different fronts, because on her solo stuff, it's a lot of shred guitar stuff. But to have a song like that with your vocal on it, some melody, a hook, got some airplay, I thought that was great. That was a really cool thing.
It was a win for both of us. It was a pleasure working with the both of
you. You know, let's talk a little bit about this tour. You announced a tour. It looks like you're going to have a pretty busy summer. Tell us about the tour that's coming up. And you've got a couple opening acts on there that are kind of rotating in. Starts April 27th in Montreal. What do you got in store for the next run on the road?
Yeah, so with the start of it, we got the Theory of a Dead Man guys supporting us. I know during the summertime, we've got the Breaking Benjamin guys supporting us. And I'm really, really looking forward to seeing both of those guys. Amazing bands. And I know that we got Ginger, a great Ukrainian metal band, starting things off for the summertime bill. And we're in the throes currently of the, you know, the Frankenstein's monster part of the tour, of putting together the actual production elements and really being experimental with pyrotechnics and all other kinds of things, some, a bunch of stuff that we've really never done before in the way that we're talking about doing it and just trying to think outside the box. A lot of these tours lately have had production that's very, very samey. You know, they, a couple of video screens, some lighting here, a little bit of pyro accents here, and boom, and that's your basic, you know, touring package. And we're trying to just, you know, do things a little bit differently and give the fans something that they may not be expecting. So that, in addition to some additional sonic templates that I know that Danny and Mike have been spending a lot of time on, and, you know, a nice deep set that goes and goes deeper into the catalog and brings out some real special surprises. I'm really looking forward to finally, after 2.5 years of driving ourselves nuts, being held hostage by a virus and not being able to do what we love, we're finally able to do it and do it at a level that we love doing it at, and to give everybody the strength and the release that I think we all need.
You know, when I was looking through your touring and the routing and the dates, one jumped out at me in June, where you are Disturbed just playing a show in Israel, where I believe you have family. Have you ever played there before?
Yeah, this is our second time.
What's it like? Do a lot of rock bands play through Israel? And what kind of business do you do? What's it like for rock bands there right now?
Plenty of bands. You know, I mean, it's amazing. There's a huge, vibrant scene. It's very welcoming. It's very open and amazing. I had the most incredible experience. We played this venue in an area called Rishon LeZion, and it was, there were like 13,000 people there, first time playing there. I mean, this time that we're doing it right in the heart of Tel Aviv at an expo center. So, cause I wanted to make sure that it was right in the thick of it. I love it. I love being able to see family and to represent and to be proud and to be to play in front of, you know, so many family members and fans and friends and to be truly, you know, home is an amazing thing, and it's an incredible homecoming every time I get the chance to do it. So this second time is going to be extra special. Really looking forward to it.
Is there a scene there, David, as far as like local bands and like clubs, and is there like a good rock scene of young bands? That are you kind of connected to that at all?
Yeah, there's a great scene there. You know, there's a developing scene. There's a bunch of bands around the area that have done really well. There's a band called Orphaned Land. You should check them out. They've really made a mark throughout the Middle East, and as an Israeli band, really building bridges and, you know, crossing boundaries when it comes to that sort of thing. It's incredible. It never ceases to amaze me how music can bring people together from all walks of life and all beliefs, and there's no clearer demonstration than that. It's truly a beautiful thing.
I mean, this is probably a lot to ask, because I know in the history of Disturbed, you've done a lot of shows in a lot of different places. But when you look back on your career up to this point, as you're about to embark on another tour, is there a show or a moment or a city or a country that you played that really still resonates with you, that really moved you, that you kind of go back to as like a real moment for you personally?
Oh, yeah. Still, when we filmed the Down with the Sickness video, we were headlining a radio show for Q101 in Chicago at the time. And it was at Tinley Park, at what was called at the time the World Music Theater. I'm not sure what they call it now. It's changed a million times, whoever buys it in that respective year.
Right.
But to me, it'll always be the World Music Theater. And it was where, you know, I had seen AC/DC, where I had seen Metallica, where I had seen, you know, all the greats growing up, and to finally be headlining that venue, you know, to 25,000 people that night. It was just such an amazing, you know, validation and redemption and celebration and, you know, all of those things. That was a, that was a moment where I finally was like, you know, boy, I guess we've really made our mark. We've quote unquote arrived, as they say.
Yeah. And, you know, the last thing, and I've always been interested in this, for people that don't know the whole timeline of Disturbed, you guys took a hiatus, I guess, somewhere around 5 years in length, where you guys just kind of went away and everybody went and did different things. And you did another band and some of the other guys did other projects and bands as well. And, you know, I remember during that time, the band, everybody, whether it was talking to John or Dan or whoever I talked to, was all like, no, there's really no issue, no drama. We just needed to take a break and everybody wanted to take a break. Looking back on that, do you think that that was really important for the longevity of Disturbed and the well-being of the band to have put that pause in there when you did?
Oh, absolutely. I think too many bands don't do it, and they run the engine dry. You know, I mean, you got to step away every once in a while. You got to let it breathe. You got to give yourselves time as individuals to be people, to have families, to be able to, you know, to live a normal non-gypsy life. it's important. Otherwise, you know, constantly being a road dog and constantly being a slave to the machine, it'll kill you.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I bring it up, because throughout history, I've heard stories of, you know, whether it was, I don't know, a band like Bon Jovi in the 80s or Leopard or any of these bands that just toured relentlessly when things got really hot for them, and they broke up and they had real bad infighting and people left, and it took a real long time for them to kind of figure it out again. And they always, when you read those interviews with those bands that went through that, they always say, if we just would have stopped for a few years and taken a breath and kind of gotten it together, we would have been fine. You guys were the one band that I can think of that actually acknowledged that and actually did that and made it work.
Thank God, man. You know, because if I don't know what I would do without this band, especially now. I need it more than I ever have. You know, I mean, it's such a saving grace for me. It's such as much as it's been a source of mental health and stability and the ability to transcend adversity and, you know, on a much more simple level, just, you know, many people's favorite soundtrack to just pumping up at the gym. It's so much, and the respect and the admiration that I have for, you know, the other guys, it goes beyond words. It's so incredibly fortunate that we found each other, that we found this thing, that we're able to continue to do what we do at the level we do it. I never take any of it for granted.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, congrats. I know you had a run there. I think that's unlike any other band. I read that, was it 4 or 5 consecutive albums that entered number one on the charts? Do I have that right?
It was 5, yeah.
I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, that is crazy.
Well, hopefully we'll get back there again one day. We'll see. Maybe we'll try to time our release so it's not coming out in the holiday season where everybody and their mother has their records coming out, and we'll have a better debut.
Well, I mean, it's really not, the debut's nice, but it's really about the long haul, isn't it? I mean, you can enter, it's nice to have that big first week, but it's really, I tell my audience about this all the time, especially younger people. I mean, I grew up working in a record store. I remember the days when it wasn't about the first week debut and the bottom dropped out 3 weeks later. I remember it was like coming in at 60 and watching the bullet go up and down for a year. Now it's like, look at where we are in week one, but pay no attention week 4 because we might not even be on the charts anymore. So I kind of like it the old way a little better.
I'm with you, brother. There's a lot of things I miss about the old days.
But what did Divisive come in at, like 3 or something?
No, on the rock chart, it came in there, but
right.
And on the rock chart, it came in at number 1, actually. On the regular Billboard 200, it came in at 13. this one. So, because it was like everybody and their mother. It's like Michael Jackson's estate put out a greatest hits. Barbra Streisand put out this. And, you know, everybody, literally, it's like first I went ahead and I said, I'm like, maybe we should be cautious about putting the record out during this time because it's the holiday season and everybody's going to put something out. And Mariah Carey rules the world at that time. And maybe we should be careful. And everybody told me, nah, don't worry about it. You'll be fine because everybody's trying to make it before the Grammy, you know, cutoff date. And we're not worried about that anyway because it doesn't move the dial for rock anyway. And here we go. Right. And everybody came out with their records and we got screwed. So it's what it is. Now, like you said, it's the long game. You know, it's about
working this
on the radio. Yeah, and it's about giving the fans and everyone a tour that is going to truly, truly be a very memorable experience, not just for them, but for us, too.
That tour kicks off in Canada. We do have listeners in in Canada. So Montreal, you're getting them first on April 27th. There's a ton of dates. Go to disturbed1.com. That's the website. All the dates are listed right there, and you can see if they're coming to your area. Breaking Benjamin, I know those guys, real good band. They're on there as well. Theory of a Dead Man, as David mentioned. The Take Back Your Life tour. And lastly, I noticed, because I follow you, you're back on Twitter. You left for a while. You're back. Love having you back on there mixing it up with people, bud.
I couldn't help myself anymore, dude.
You know, How long did you stay off?
A little smarter about it. 7 years. Would you believe that?
How long?
7 years.
Really? I didn't realize it was that long.
Yeah, when I had shut down the account originally, I had like 400,000 followers and, you know, lost them all because I had, you know, deleted the account, had to start from scratch. And yeah, it is what it is. I'm not doing it for that. I do it just so that when I do want to go ahead and say something about something I believe in or feel strongly about, I can. You know, and I'm not looking to get into it and, you know, to get stupid with people and, you know, feed the trolls per se. But every once in a while, when you try to stand up for something that means something to you, it can be a place to at least that's at least effective at spreading the word. I don't know how effective it is at anything else, but you can spread the word.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's important. Everybody should be able to express their opinion, in my opinion. So
I agree.
Anyway, man, great to talk to you. Congrats on the record. And I look forward to seeing that video with you and Ann. That should be awesome. It's a phenomenal song. So that's coming down the pike. And as we mentioned, tour dates, the tickets are on sale now, the packages, all that stuff. People just go to, whether it be Ticketmaster or your site, everything's a go, or did they start up sales yet on that?
The pre-sales were today, and the official online sales start tomorrow. So everybody go get them.
There you go. All right, man. Well, listen, best to you and the family. Enjoy. I'm in cold New Jersey, so enjoy Florida, and I'll hopefully see you out there somewhere soon, man.
All right, brother. Look forward to it. You're always welcome. Take care, brother.
Thank you. Appreciate it, David. See ya. Well, thanks to Draymond. Always great to visit with him. Hope you guys enjoyed that conversation.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. Because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Promised you a second interview this week, and I got it for you right now. You know him best as the drummer from the band Cinderella, but you may not know about what he's doing these days in life, and it is related to music. Have a listen. Here's Fred Corey. Fred, how are you, buddy?
Hey, Eddie, how are you?
I'm great. So I was telling my audience before, been a little while since we talked, been a little while since I had you on the air. So many of them may not know what you have been doing ever since Cinderella kind of called it a day. And in a nutshell, before we talk about your new show that's coming out, can you get those that are not aware of the things you've been doing? Can you give them a little bit of an overview?
Sure. Yeah, you know, during the whole heyday, I always thought with Cinderella, I was always looking for the 15 minutes and then it was going to be over. And every time the tour bus would show up again, I'm like, oh my gosh, bonus time, bonus time, bonus time. So kind of near the, I don't even want to say the end, because have we really officially broken up? You know, when we were doing less and less shows and kind of just doing the cruises, I went to school for film and TV composition to kind of learn that art, because I'd started working for the LA Kings doing their sonic branding for the in-game and their commercials and the Jumbotron and coming up with a kind of a theme sonic logo for them rather than the Kings logo you'd see on their jerseys. And through that, I met some people and I figured, you know, I just have to get in a place where I can be ready for an opportunity that happens. So I went to UCLA and I started doing composition for TV and learning the art of that. And then I did the Berklee program. And then I started, I got a gig through a friend of mine, Gabe Sachs, who's a show creator. He did Diary of a Wimpy Kid. And way back when they did Freaks and Geeks. And he had a new show. And he said, if this show goes, we were on the advisory board for the Kings together. And he said, if this show goes, you are going to be the composer. And I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm in school, so hopefully I can. And it went, and it was an NBC medical drama for 4 years. It was a hit show. So right out of the gate, I was just the luckiest guy. Panicked the whole time, of course. I got through it, and now this is kind of what I do for a living. And it's amazing.
Well, let me ask you about learning that craft, because you're known as a drummer. And of course you were the drummer in Cinderella, and most drummers, there are exceptions of course, but most are known as just guys that play drums. It's not all that common that drummers take on whatever other additional instruments or computer programming or whatever you need to do to actually score things. So did you have any knowledge or expertise in other instruments or doing that before you started taking the classes, or did you learn everything in the school?
Well, I was a violinist since I was 5 years old.
Oh, I didn't know that.
First. Oh yeah. So it was like really heavy theory. And when I was seven, I was in conservatory for music, and I've been in orchestras my entire life. So I know what the orchestra does from the inside, from playing violin, which I play a lot on this latest show that we'll talk about. But so I was a violinist, and then later on, I wanted to meet girls, right? Because violinists, you know, you don't see any. So there was a girl drummer, so I wanted to meet her, but I was so shy and bashful that I couldn't. So I figured I better learn how to play drums so I can stand next to her in the orchestra. And I did. And I got that spot playing snare drum next to her. And we were in that orchestra together for 2 years, and I never said a word to her. And then during that time, I learned trumpet as well, because my friend down the street wanted to play trumpet. So kind of, I know the brass instruments. I know the string instruments. If I don't know how to play them, I know what their ranges are and how they should be played, so I can program them that way. So it was kind of the culmination of everything in the strict. My mom was 4 hours a day. She said, you know, if you're going to not have a job, I've never had a job, like a normal job. So she was like, if you're not going to do that, you're going to practice. So I'd come home from school and practice for 4 hours a day, every day, my entire life. And, you know, I can't throw a ball for more than 6 feet, but I can sure do my Paganini.
So that varied, like, that's really interesting, because you playing violin and having all that other experience to the regular rock fan, there's Fred Corey, the drummer in Cinderella, that's all they would think. But having all that other rounded experience in learning music and different instruments, even though that isn't what you ultimately became known for initially in your career in a rock band, that actually has paid off, I would imagine, greatly in what you're doing now.
Oh, incredibly. I mean, that's the whole thing. So in the night shift, which was the NBC show, you know, there were just strings and pads and things like that. But now in the arc, it's really it's very orchestral. And then you have to, our showrunner and the creator of the show, Dean Devlin, said, he said, look, at I don't want to hear the score that everybody expects. I want something different. So I had to take those instruments and change them, still approach it in an orchestral sort of way. There are no guitars on this one, nothing like that, no drum set at all, and kind of tweak them, turn them on their head, and make them a little bit different, but still approach it like an orchestra. So everything is really, it still feels orchestral, but in a completely different way. So yes, all of that really comes, you know, helps me get to the finish line on this. I'm so thankful for it. You know, of course I complained about it my whole life. Just, I want to go outside and play with my kids. And my mom was very strict, with the practicing. So kind of, it's good, worked out.
So when you score something, and we'll talk specifically more about your show that you just did, you mentioned the arc, but when you do this work, Fred, do you do it all yourself, whether through actually playing the instruments yourself or using computers, or do you actually bring in other musicians and have people play things that maybe you can't do as well? Like, how does the process actually work? Are you just a self-contained unit? You get the film or you get the TV show and you get the scenes and you have to basically score it and come up with stuff that fits, and then you turn it into the person who runs the show and they say yay or nay? Like how does the whole process work to score something?
All right. So I use both. So when you get something, a show, let's say this episode I just did of The Ark, we have, you know, there are many producers on the thing, film producers and the editors. And then so they will set up what's called a spotting session. And I have a music editor, Joe DeVoe, who does every show that you guys see on TV, the best, really the best in the world. So I'm really lucky to have that. So he'll be on it, and his assistant will be on it, and all of the producers, and we watch it through a thing called CineSync. So everyone is seeing the same picture. We're hearing the same audio. On the ARC, we don't have any temp music, but I'll explain that really quickly. So we all watch the show together. Most shows are temped, which means there's already a score in place. Either by, if it's a brand new show, it's by another composer, could be Hans Zimmer, could be whatever they kind of have the vibe for, what they want the feel to be. And we all watch it together and talk about where the music should come in and where the music should go out. And then Joe is taking very detailed notes of the time code, where it comes in, where it comes out, and what everybody's talking about. So the showrunner might say, all right, the feel here, they're running down a hallway, but I don't want to lead into what's going to happen to them next. So play it a little lighter, play it against what's happening on the scene. Or if there's a dialogue going between the people, play it from her perspective, not his perspective. And then after she says this word, let's change it to his perspective. So not only are we watching this entire thing, but we're trying to figure out now, all right, how we're going to do it. And I'm immediately thinking, am I staying out of the way of the dialogue? I always look at it as the singer is the dialogue. So never step on Tom's vocals. My whole life, you can't do that. It's the vocal is the main thing in a song. And also on television or in a movie, the dialogue is the main thing. It's not our music. So we're assisting telling that story. So do I have to stay out of the range of the dialogue? If it's a girl speaking, do I want to stay a little bit lower than what she's saying, so I don't interfere if I'm going to be playing over what she's saying. So all of that happens, and then I get it, and then they let me run with it. And then it turns into a 15-hour day for me every day sitting here by myself. And I score it. After I finish it, I send it to my music editor. He takes everything, and everything is to picture, timestamped to picture. He actually puts it back to picture and then sends it off to the showrunners and the producers. And then a day later or 2 days later, they come back with their notes. Hey, we like this. It plays a little bit. This is too funny, or this is too sad, or why don't we hold off on this or come in a little sooner? And we just do the notes, and it's a process that just goes on and on. A friend of mine told me it's kind of like being in a cake eating contest and winning the contest, and the prize is more cake, and it just keeps coming. So that is really the boring way around what it is to score a show. And I'm doing two at the same time now. So as you can imagine, there's not much sleep, but it's a whole team. And we're all after the same finish line, you know, and we all want to do the best show that we can. So it's a tough job, but it's fun. As far as having people come in and play, I do another show called Almost Paradise, and that's on Amazon. We're doing our second season now, and then there's a lot of really intricate guitar stuff, like acoustic guitar, because it's kind of a funny cop show. It's funny, but it still has a lot of action and drama and emotional stuff. And I bring in Jamie Kime, who plays in Zappa Played Zappa. And he's just an absolutely phenomenal guitar player. And he came in and did the stuff on Night Shift for me. So he's my guitar guy that I bring in. And he's really amazing. And he understands how scoring works. And I'm not writing songs. I don't write songs at all. What I call it is I write emotion with musical instruments.
Mm. And I bet that doing what you do and have been doing now successfully for a while, when we watch TV, meaning myself or my audience, we acknowledge, obviously, whether it's TV or movies, that there's a score and there's music in it. But you probably, I would imagine being in this, it's changed how you watch and listen to anything, because you're probably, your mind and your ear is probably so trained and focused on who did the scoring or the music for whatever you're watching, right? Like you probably got, I mean, imagine you get pretty wrapped up in it where your mind is a little more hyper-focused on that element of it than the audience is, because for the audience, some of it might not even be so obvious, the scoring stuff you're doing, where you're probably picking up every little thing.
Oh, you're absolutely right. But our job is to stay out of the way. So we're supposed to creep in when you don't even hear us in the background. So not even noticing that score is there. So I do watch TV in a completely different way. I go to movies kind of only to watch, to see the score, to hear the score and see what they're doing and where they creep in. But there are so many times where I'll be watching something on Netflix and after I'm done go, oh my gosh, I didn't even notice the score. And now I was just blown away by it. And I have to rewind and listen, where did they come in? How did they come in? And what, you know, some really, like there's a show, I think Succession, that guy did it really well on a few cues. I was like, oh my gosh. So yes, I do watch it. It's a blessing and a curse to watch
right.
it that way. Cause you do see it. The worst thing my cousin once said to me, she's older, and she once said, I was trying to watch I was watching your show, but I just could not concentrate on it because the music was so good. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, that's the worst compliment you could ever give me, because I'm supposed to not be there. I'm supposed to just support the thing and make you feel something. So you're like, I couldn't stop listening. And I was like, okay, I got to go back to the drawing board.
Are there other, Fred, are there other guys in rock music or hard rock music like yourself that have transitioned into doing this that you know? Like, is there any other people that we don't know that are doing things like this from like our world?
There's a guy, Tyler Bates, who was...
Oh, yeah, I know Tyler.
So he does, you know, he does the big stuff. John Wick, Deadpool, Guardians of the Galaxy, big film composer. and now is kind of getting more into playing guitar, and he's out with Cantrell for this summer's tour. And his daughter, Lola, who's absolutely Lola Collette, she's amazing. She's an amazing pianist, an amazing artist, and she's playing keyboards in Jerry's band. And then, of course, he used to be in Manson. So that's cool. And Roy Mayorga, I think he's in ministry now, he did a movie. I think he did the Foo Fighters movie. So I don't know of any guys doing TV as much as I'm doing TV, which I love TV. But yeah, there are some guys starting to get into it. It's really cool. In fact, I'm seeing Tony Kanaal tomorrow. Tomorrow night we're going out, and he is scoring a show. I don't know what it is, for Netflix. So
is that the bass player from No Doubt?
Yeah.
I've met him a couple times. Nice guy. And the interesting thing about Roy doing it is Roy's a drummer. So there's another drummer that's done that transition.
So Roy is way into like the synths. He's into the analog, plugs in and doing all this. He'll realize one day that that's crazy because, you know, when you get notes, you can't change it. But we talk all the time about this kind of stuff. And hey, what are you doing here? What are you doing there? What are you using for that? What is that? And you know, we're all kind of in this little group that we all talk to each other about how we're doing things, why we're doing things, what are we using, what tools are we using, how do we get that sound, advice. Just lend an ear to this, check it out, and let me, because it's all about picture. The whole thing is about picture. And once we realize that we really aren't writing songs at all. So many people say, oh man, can you help me get my music played? It's like, we don't do that. We don't even, you know, we're writing no songs. We're just writing emotions and feelings. And so if you're watching a show and you start crying, it probably is because of the music. Because, you know, sometimes you're watching some acting and you're going, oh boy. And you'll get that note. Somebody will say that to you and say, hey, can you help out XX actor, whoever it is? And that means they're not delivering their line as they should. So can you help them with music?
Right. Interesting.
So we're there to fix a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, so tell everybody about the show, your newest show, which you referenced before, called The Ark.
Yes. So this is going to be on Sci-Fi, 10 Eastern, 9 Central, and then again, 10 East, 10 Pacific on the West Coast. And it's a show.
What day?
So Dean Devlin, Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Every Wednesday. Yep. Every Wednesday on Sci-Fi. And Dean Devlin did Independence Day and Stargate. And Jonathan Glassner, we have two showrunners. He did Stargate SG-1. And they created it. And The Ark, it takes place 100 years in the future. And we are starting to colonize other planets, and we're trying to get to Proxima B because we found out that the Earth has a finite time, 75 more years. And so we're starting to go out into space and colonize places. And in this 5-year mission, there's an accident. And a lot of the people that are running the ship and the upper statesmen, if you will, and stateswomen are killed, and they're not there. So it's the normal people like you and I have to now figure out. So they're all in cryogenic sleeper pods, and they're supposed to be for 5 years. Well, 4 years into it, that happens, and they all wake up. So they don't have enough food. They don't have enough water. They have a 2-week food and water supply. And they have another year to go on this journey. And everybody that's running this this ship, they're gone. So now it's really a survival of the human race in its most simple form. And they have to figure out how to get water. They have to figure out how to remain on this course and get to where they're going, how to grow food. And they're on a spaceship that's damaged. And that's where the journey starts. That's the opening scene, is you're seeing what's happening, and then it goes from there. So it's just really, we still have the everyday challenges that everybody has to have. You have the romances, you have the, you know, there aren't any space aliens or anything like that. This is just really these guys trying to get from point A to Proxima B. And Proxima B is actually a place that is the closest to Earth, and it's a real thing. It's a real planet. So I think probably one day we will get there, and then they'll look back on this show and say, hey, remember when they did that way back when?
Yeah, right. Kind of like Star Trek. I mean, you see right? the old Star that's, Treks that's now, right. and they got the half the stuff in there is actually more than half is actually real now. So, yeah, it's crazy to think about that. So, again, this is called The Ark, ARK, Sci-Fi Channel, Wednesdays, 10 Eastern, starting this Wednesday, brand new series scored by Fred Corey. So, Fred, before I got to go, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, you mentioned at the top of our conversation here that you when we referenced Cinderella, your band, you said, well, did we ever really break up? Did you? You know?
No. No, we never did. We haven't.
Never, there
up.
Was never really a farewell, we right?
I'm still a drummer of Cinderella. Eric is still the bass player of Cinderella. Tom is still the singer. Tom is still Cinderella. We have not broken up. We never broke up. We never called it quits. We just stopped playing. And I talked to Tom quite often. He just had a birthday on the 26th. So if anybody hasn't wished him a happy birthday, shame on you.
I did.
But yes, of course. We're all buddies, you know, unfortunately and then there were three. Which yesterday during the Eagles game, Jeff was the biggest Eagles fan on the planet. And then when they went to commercial and everybody just started blowing up my phone, did you hear
they
Gypsy
played Gypsy Road?
Road.
Yeah.
That would have been Jeff's reigning moment in life. He would have been so happy. So many people texted and said, man, Jeff would have loved this. Jeff would have loved this. No, we have not broken up. We have no plans to play again, but we always say never say never. You never look at Motley. They're back. Motley is going to be such a new thing with John coming in there and bringing in that youthful thing that they need, you know? And I know they're sounding great. We haven't broken up.
Do you miss playing in Cinderella or with anybody for that matter? Do you miss going out on the road and getting behind a kit and playing drums?
You know what? I am antsy for that now. Again, I've been playing a lot. So I do go to my studio. I have two studios. I have a studio at home because with the time, you know, I'll be up at 6 or 7 in the morning and I'm immediately working and I'll work and then I'll probably sometimes I'll finish at 1 or 2 in the morning. So it really is that disciplined of a gig that you have to do. But I am still going to the studio almost every day and maybe every other day and playing my drums quite a bit. So I do miss it. I do need to go out and do another arena or stadium tour. I don't want to go do clubs and I don't miss it that much to go out and schlep through clubs, but I do. And if that sounds a little bit hoity toity, it's I do want to go out and I do want to go out and play and do a big, like a shed tour or something like that, or a stadium tour with somebody. I mean, I am the fill in guy after all. So maybe I'll get a call to fill in on something. But yeah, I do miss it. I of course I miss it because, you know, Eddie, the thing that's different about being in a band and being a TV composer, because I heard you mention that I'm in the background and I'm doing things. When you're in a band, you could have the crappiest show of your life and really go up there and just have an off night and just suck. And everybody's still saying, man, you guys were killer. So good. So good. And you could do the absolute opposite and just go, man, I scored the crap out of that cue, which is a piece of music. Oh, man, what a great cue. And you'll have 100 people from the network or come in and say, man, you got to change this. You got to change that. So, it's a tougher gig. It was really easy being out there and being, you know, playing rock and roll star. That was a lot easier. Or as Paul would say, rock and roll star, you know. so that's all you're getting.
Fred does the best Paul Stanley ever.
So it's, so I do miss it. And hopefully I'll go out there again. I'll be out there again to do another.
Well, yeah, you know, it's funny. The Cinderella thing is funny because, and I'm going to see Tom this weekend because he's playing a private party for a friend of mine for his birthday. So I'm going to see him on Saturday. But we all know that the value, we've seen this happen a million times, that the value is always in the name, right? So like whoever has the name, Foreigner has been playing for 20 years essentially with no original members, but they've got the name, people go, what have you. So there's still, I think, especially as this 80s music becomes a generation's classic rock, there's a lot of value in that name. And Tom plays a lot of Cinderella and bills himself as Cinderella's Tom Kiefer and all of that. But all that being said, and as great as Tom is, and as great as that band is, I constantly get calls from my audience saying, man, we'd love to see Cinderella again. And sadly, as you mentioned, Jeff is not there anymore. There's a number of people that pointed out to me how cool it would be if you guys ever did it to have Jeff's son, who I understand is a pretty good musician, you know, fill in for his dad. But, you know, I don't know if if any of that, it sounds like that would all appeal to you, but I'm assuming it's not really your call.
Well, you know, we have, this is all I'll say about it because it's going to turn into clickbait. But we have spoken about it. Mm. That's all I'll say about that. You know, we all love Sebastian. We all kind of were there since he was a little baby. And golly, he looks and moves just like him on stage. It's unbelievable. If you watch, you go, oh my gosh, that's Jeff. And there have been a couple of clips that people have sent me and I thought it was Jeff. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's Sebastian. So, you know, Sebastian's great, but there are no plans for anything with Cinderella. The cool thing about Tom, there are many cool things about Tom, obviously, you know, he's our brother, but he doesn't go out there as Cinderella. And that's the one thing he always said, if it's not four of us, it's not Cinderella. He's playing the Cinderella songs. Do they sound like Cinderella? Yeah. Does it have the fire? It's different. Because there's more guys and different types of players. And Savannah's out there, who's great. It's just a whole different vibe. But they are playing the songs. But he's not going out as Cinderella. Because it isn't Cinderella. It's Cinderella's Tom Kiefer. And he's always been cool about that. Because could he go out as Cinderella? Of course he could. But then, you know, there is the blowback from that, which it's not Cinderella.
Right. Hey, one last thing. You know, you were there was I think it was on the Monsters of Rock cruise a number of years ago that you, for those that don't recall, you had a really cool band with Stephen Piercy called Arcade. And Stephen, I'm in Vegas now, and Stephen lives here now. I see him all the time. And I think you guys were actually supposed to play and it didn't happen or whatever. And I know you said you wouldn't want to do clubs, and that would obviously be a club thing if you did it. But do you feel like there's any unfinished business there?
I don't. I love Steven. I talked to him quite a bit. And it was a great band. The first record was so good. Man, it was so good. The second record was a lot heavier. By the way, to all the audience that keep going out and buying like Arcade 7, there's only two Arcade records. There's no live record, whatever he's doing. It was one called Arcade and A2. Those are the only Arcade records. You know, Steven is releasing a box set probably, but but there are only two. I don't know. We were supposed to. He's asked me to come up and play with him before, and I've wanted to. It's just I'm so darn busy. And that band, so many people don't know about it,
right,
that I don't think I could take the time to go and work it up. Because the one thing that we all learned being in Cinderella, we're not one of those bands that rehearses for 4 days and go out. And I think it's been, you know, kind of instilled in us now as individuals and professionals, we have to take a month to just really work it out. So when we hit So when we hit the first show, we are seasoned and ready to go. And it's like flawless. There can't be a mistake. There can't be, you know, kind of, oh, we're knocking the rust out. That's what rehearsal is for. And I think with Arcade, there would just be so much time to go out there and do it. I don't think it would be. I don't think people would dig it. And I don't want to go out and not be what people remember. Right. I don't want to be the older version of it. Like, oh, gosh, they were so much better when they were younger. Because right. Foreigner sounds killer, right? Motley sounds amazing. Def Leppard, holy cow, look at these guys.
I just saw Styx. I mean, those guys from the 70s, I mean, sounding unbelievable. Tommy Shaw is like a kid still. It's crazy with that. Some of these guys are just, I don't know, they're so well-preserved, it's unbelievable. It just blows your mind. But one last quick thing on Cinderella that just hit me. I was probably there. When was the last show? Was it on one of the cruises?
Yeah, it was on a cruise. Man, Eddie,
Monsters, obviously.
It was a Monsters cruise, and I knew I was doing a show right after that. And I remember it. I remember staying. I walked off because I knew it was going to be my last show. And
why did you think that? Did Tom tell you guys he wasn't going to do it anymore?
No, I had a show coming up and I knew it was a big one. So
what do you mean? A show scoring something?
A TV show. Yeah.
Okay. But not a gig, not playing live.
No. I had a TV show. So, I remember the show so well. It's funny you mention it. So I let everybody walk off stage and I stopped at the end and I looked back at the crowd and I was like, are you ready to give this up? And I looked at everybody and it was really hard. And I was like, I have to move to level two. I have to do this. And I looked at everybody and I just closed my eyes and turned around and walked off. And that was the last time we played. It was very, I'll never forget it.
Did everybody know that there were going to be no more shows, or was it just, did Cinderella just kind of dissipate and kind of everybody went their own ways?
I think everybody went their own ways. I think everybody just, they were starting to do things and people were getting antsy to do other things. And, you know, we really only did four records in an entire career. So Eric was getting antsy and Jeff was looking at doing solo stuff. And, you know, I was going to the other thing. So it was never anything about anybody in the band. It was never a breakup, like we want to break up or anything like that. It was just, we all want to do something else. Tom wanted to do stuff with Savannah, who's an insane writer. She's so good. So she's an artist in her, and we're growing up. But then you always miss something about what really got you. Listen, I wouldn't be anywhere. I wouldn't be doing any of this without Tom and that band. That's the only reason that doors have opened, and the only reason that I get to have this insane second career is because of Cinderella. So I owe everything to Tom for making that decision in 1986 to bring me on board. So if he needs me for something, I will be there. That's all I'm saying. Because everything that's happened in my life career-wise is because of that guy. So,
yeah. Well, listen, buddy, I got to run. Great catching up with you. Everybody check out Fred Corey's show, The Ark, which is on Sci-Fi, premiering this Wednesday, 10 o'clock Eastern. And it sounds cool. I love sci-fi stuff. It sounds like something up my alley. So I will absolutely tune in. And when you do, you can hear what Fred is doing as scoring this show, and you got a little taste of how this all came together for him and some of the stuff he's done, and some rock talk, some Cinderella stuff in there too. So I appreciate the time, buddy. Send my best to your wife, and next time I'm in LA, if you are free and have downtime around your busy schedule, I'd love to see you.
I will make time for you.
All right, bud. All the best. Good luck with the arc.
Thanks so much. All right. See you later.
Take care. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye, everybody. Bye.
Great dude. Always great to see Fred when I hang out with him in Los Angeles when I get out there. And I thank him for dropping by and telling us about scoring and some of the work he's doing now, and some interesting stuff on potential Cinderella talk in there as well. Fred's TV show that he's scoring currently, The Ark, is now airing on the Sci-Fi Network. And thanks earlier this week, of course, to David Draymond. Again, both of these the interviews you heard on the podcast happened live on my SiriusXM radio show, Trunk Nation. Be sure to join me for live rock talk every day, 3 to 5 Eastern, noon to 2 Pacific, Faction Talk, SiriusXM, Channel 103. Replays on 103 most nights, midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific. But you don't have to wait for the replays. Just go ahead and listen anytime you want on the SiriusXM app. If you're only listening to the podcast, again, you're only getting a tiny taste of what I'm doing every day on the radio. So be sure to sign up and join me for Trunk Nation weekdays live on SiriusXM Radio. Thanks to Joel Pollack for producing. Again, at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook page. And I'll see you guys next Thursday for another podcast. And hopefully each and every day on the radio on Trunk Nation. Have a good one.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.